Welcome back, everyone, to Progressively Incorrect. My name is Zach Groeschel. I'm so excited today for this episode all about writing. If you go back to the other episodes of this podcast, a ton of episodes on writing, it's because I really want to solve this problem. We have several sponsors, as you know, to this podcast, which I will go through right now. And that includes John Catt from Hachette Learning, which is a publisher of great education books, including my own book, Just Tell Them the Power of Explanations and Explicit Teaching. I have put a link in the show notes for all of John Catt's amazing books, their whole catalog. Go check it out. And if you're considering publishing, go talk to Alex and the folks at John Catt. They are amazing and they will get you started with your first book, just as they did for me. The other sponsor is StepLab. What is StepLab? It is a platform for instructional coaches that centralizes all of your activities and uses lots of video and an approach called responsive coaching. I'm the director of StepLab North America. Reach out to me and we'll get you started on a better approach to instructional coaching. I am here today with Leslie Laud, and we are going to be talking about Think SRSD and explicit approaches to teaching writing. Leslie, how are you doing today?
I'm good.
I'm so excited to have you on to talk about this topic. We've sort of gone in and out of talking about writing because it's the missing component. How about you introduce yourself to my audience? Tell us what you do.
Sure. So I do have to start by acknowledging what a huge fan I am of Progressively Incorrect and your work and how I listen to all your podcasts and literally will stop and cheer. So my background is I'm 35 years into our field. I've been teaching right up to this year. I still pull together groups of kids and teach. A couple of years ago, I began shifting over to do more empirical controlled research, but I've been doing action research and publishing peer-reviewed journals all along. And my great passion is writing. And how do we get this right? And how do we address the problem that you opened with?
It's interesting because I feel like we figured out in some circles how to kind of get kids going with early reading. And then after that, there's a lot less consensus and there's a lot less space for the stuff that we're going to be talking about today. Let me go ahead and begin kind of with a definition I found of Think SRSD. People are kind of searching for different approaches to writing at the moment. They're always asking me for recommendations. You describe it as an explicit methodology that teaches students to break down a piece of writing into its component parts and then uses frameworks, modeling, examples, and feedback to ensure that the writing happens effectively. Can you tell us more about this approach, Think SRSD, what that is?
Yes, you found a wonderful definition. Maybe it came from the website, not sure, but it sounds good. Yes, that is exactly what it is. Think SRSD is a framework that rests primarily on the well-researched approach called self-regulated strategy development, which has its origins all the way back in University of Kansas under Don Deschler, for those of you who've been tracking strategy instruction for a long time. And it does introduce mnemonics and strategies and then doesn't just leave it there. It includes modeling how to use these in a gradual release staged framework where first it's I do, I introduce, then it's we do, and then we carefully in a scaffolded, structured, supported way, begin guiding students to work more and more independently until they reach independent performance.
You mentioned like mnemonics. How are those introduced and how do students use those as they kind of go through like this gradual release?
Yes. The mnemonics are the concrete. They're kind of the tip of the iceberg. They're what you see. The whole iceberg itself is the gradual release, the staged going through practicing. But yes, the mnemonics are at the tip. And I have to credit the coaches in the Weymouth Public Schools. One of them just put it so beautifully. She said, the mnemonics are what facilitate the self-regulation and the transfer and the getting to independence. So they are really important. The mnemonics, the core of SRSD is POW. And then SRSD has studied various mnemonics for opinion writing, informational writing, and narrative writing. So those differ according to genre, but POW has been the core. POW has its origins in POWER, which came from Carol Sue Englert at University of Michigan. Might be Michigan State University, and it's very bad if I'm reversing those. But Carol Sue Englert created this, or I found it first in her publications in the late 80s, early 90s. And POWER stood for Plan, Organize, Write, Edit, Revise. And then SRSD picked up the POW part and ran with that. But that is really the core, Barry Zimmerman, that we need to have a set of steps that students understand and can follow, because that's what facilitates the handoff. Otherwise, they're just sort of swimming, looking at this strategy, not knowing how to use it. They need a set of steps. And so POWER is a procedural mnemonic in that it tells me what to do step by step. And it's beautiful. Our kids write POWER on their paper, and then they check it off as they're working through each step. And for kids with executive functioning, to not have that is like pouring kerosene on ADHD. But when they do have a set of steps, then their brilliance can come out and shine. So yes, POW. And then the second one, we use TIDE. I made up TDC in the winter of 2011, 2012, and then it became TIDE. Linda Mason generated TIDE later that year. And it tells kids that is a content mnemonic, not a process mnemonic, it's content. It tells the kids what to include. So you include a topic, information, details, or detailed analysis, depending on the age, and then an ending. So those are the beautiful mnemonics.
Love it. I kind of wanted to ask you about this because we're talking about these like kind of processes that you would use in writing, right? They're like, it's strategy instruction. But when a lot of people think about writing, they think about kind of grammar instruction, I guess. They think of like teaching all of these kind of rules and things. And I'm curious, what have we learned about writing in the past few decades that sort of have gone beyond maybe an old school approach to writing that may have worked in some ways and not in others?
It's always and both. And our field has such a hard time with and both. I cannot understand why that is so hard for our field. But yes, it's an and both. And as you're saying, you know, when we struggle with and both, we tend to go to one pocket. And so people may have seen writing as grammar or spelling. And yes, those are actually really, well, spelling is a really powerful predictor of writing quality, fascinatingly enough, according to Dr. Adria Truckenmiller's research. So yes, and I think I've thought a lot about this, and I think it's because you can see it. It's apparent to the human eye right off, whereas the nuance of deeper thinking in writing is so much more gray and harder to see. So it's easier to say, oh, I see a fragment. That's poor writing, rather than to realize, no, that was intentionally placed and it was used because they were trying to drive home the message of how jarring the moment was in the book or whatever. But you can see the grammar instantly. You can see the spelling and you can correct it. So I think that that's where that gets placed. But it's so important. And my 20-year journey, solely obsessed with writing, has looked at the best of how do we teach both.
Excellent. So are we talking about like it's necessary to have a separate part of the day dedicated towards writing, or is it integrated, and does it interface with their ELA program? Like tell me more of this kind of, as a teacher, how logistically am I looking at incorporating this when time is short and so on?
Our field and even researchers have been around the block on this one. It's a complicated one. Back in the day when I taught in New York City decades back, writing and reading were their own separate universe. And writing block was completely divorced from reading. And even the IES guide said there should be at least 30 minutes a day of writing instruction, but wasn't crystal clear that this should be connected to what we're reading. It was hinted at and suggested, but writing, I do not believe, apart from, I will say, you know, never say never, like, you know, a poetry, a story writing, there can be. But for the most part, if we really want to lift that 33% unacceptable number for our nation, we need to integrate reading and writing and use them to lever each other. So how do we do this in ELA? When the ELA programs first started coming out, and there was a major metamorphosis in 2012 with the Common Core, the ELA programs dramatically changed. And they came out with a reading band and a writing band. And the writing band was aimed at sales, and writer's workshop was the big thing. So the writing band was primarily like personal narrative and disconnected from the reading. So we went to work with all of our schools to try and join these like parallel lines, like, okay, how do we make, you know, one program, it's the blue band and the red band. Okay, how do we make it purple and join them? And we thought and thought, and it was messy. And what we began to realize is that's the wrong way of thinking about it. It's not two parallel lines. It's like a sequenced flow chart instead. And at the beginning of the week, you want to be reading heavy, like close reading, like applying everything we know, building background knowledge, doing everything good we know to make sure that we've got deep understanding of what we've read. Then the latter half of the week should be focused on responding to what we've read. And so it's more of a flow chart than a bringing together. But some ELA programs, they pretty much fall into two buckets. Some go on a weekly rotation. And for those, there is a look back and write or respond to what we've read question on Friday. So we just really zero in on that and spend the whole week getting the kids ready to respond beautifully and teach how to do that. Because the teachers would always say, I assign that, but I don't teach it. No, we're going to teach the kids how to. And then for the knowledge building programs, which go on like a 16-day, or for those, we have to look more closely at where does a good writing prompt in response to text fit? How many days will it take? It's a little bit more fluid, which may have advantages or disadvantages or both.
What you're saying is if you're working with existing resources, you're going to sort of do an analysis on your current program that you're using. You got to think through how this is going to look in terms of the sequencing of how writing's going to be taught and how writing's going to boost the existing program. So what do you do to get this process started so that you can really make sure that there's daily doses of writing, but that it's integrated in your existing programs?
So this is who we are and what we do every day. The schools that tend to bring us on are schools that are already well down the path of science of reading, although some are beginning the journey too. And most tend to have HQIM. And so this is what we're doing every week, 5-7 days a week, we're working on this. And so we already have advanced methods and tools for how to integrate with each of the major HQIM. You know, we have file folders. We actually offer courses on how to integrate ThinkSRSD with expeditionary learning or whatever your program is. How do we start? There are fundamental principles. First, your program needs to have rich text. They all do. They all have beautiful, rich, complex text. Then we have to pick the prompts. Usually the writing prompts in a program are not the strongest, and the reading comprehension prompts are stronger. So we find the reading comp program prompts. Then we dress those up, fine tune them, make them a little stronger, a little meatier, a little more rigorous. And then we look at the text. There's often way too much text. We're fire hosing kids with text. They're doing more consuming than creating, which is a mistake. The brain is learning better when it's generative. So we look at, okay, which of all the texts you have, which ones are we going to use to write in response to? We may not have time to get to all the other texts that are in your program. Let's pick the richest, meatiest. So we start with the texts, the prompts, and then we go right in, teach the teachers the strategies, and then show them in their programs. And this is where like the light bulbs go off and they love it. When we put up CKLA or we put up Wonders and we say, look, here's page 31 in your teaching guide. Here's where you're going to find the prompt and here's how you're going to integrate it in. And when they see that, it sets off the light bulbs and then they can innovate. And then they look at their next weeks and they know how to integrate.
It's so interesting you say that now that I think back to like the first program I used in like whatever 2000 something was Reading Street, Scott Forstmann's Reading Street. I remember that, but that was the first program. And the comprehension questions, you're right, were rich, were targeted, were like were actually meaty. Like that's what the designers had focused on, I think. And then the writing prompts were just like these kind of babyish type of like, oh, like sort of optional, and it would mention in there, this is optional. If you have to cut anything, and what would we do first? We'd cut that. It takes a long time to get kids to write. Now that I think about it, like, what is the biggest challenge you have in this analysis? Like, from your point of view, when you get a job and you have to figure out like how this works, what's the most challenging place to begin when it comes to like doing this type of design work with schools?
A couple of things. It's a great question. Time is always the bugaboo for everyone everywhere. How do we find the time for the teachers to do the ongoing work? And it takes years. The teachers will always tell us there's not enough time, just like you said. And so we have to get the teachers to think about how to prioritize biggest bang for the buck. But we don't get pushback. When we make the argument to teachers that writing is creating, reading is consuming, and they all nod and say, yes, we need to do more creation than consuming. So that is something that comes up, but they address it. I would say the biggest challenge is twofold. One, teachers have not had courses in how to write and how to teach writing at all the different grade levels. So they may know how to write a killer A plus college essay, but what should a second grade essay look like? They may not know. And that was something that really surprised me. We ran an $11 million federally funded grant to scale evidence-based practices. And it was so cool. I was zooming into classrooms all over the nation every day, talking directly to teachers. And they would make an exemplar and show it to me. And I would see, oh, they don't have a topic sentence that's clear, or they don't have this. And I thought, just because they can do it at the college level doesn't mean that they can write a second grade essay. So how are they going to model and teach this? And so what our best coaches are doing is they're creating exemplars, passing them out to the teachers and having the teachers red ink them, but they're teaching the teachers. The second biggest challenge is a lot of teachers don't want to let go of grammar instruction as per the HQIM. And what the HQIMs are doing is not always aligned with science. I mean, globally, they're giving rich text, they're structured, they're, a lot of positive marks. But the grammar component of isolated drills, worksheets are not how kids learn grammar. And so we have to kind of wean them off, and we use something called the daily gist to help them teach the elements of a sentence, practice them, and then bring that gist in when they're writing. And bring what they're learning about language and developing when they move to write. But making that transition, especially for teachers of English learners who know how important grammar is, and we do too, it's hard for them to let go of the program they're holding and do something that's more aligned with science because the program doesn't have the materials for them.
That does make sense. You have certain kids who just at the very beginning of second grade or whatever, they just don't produce a lot of writing. You try your best to kind of build up their habits around writing, but they're just not putting anything down. After a while, I feel like it starts to kind of become self-sustaining. But at the very beginning, when you're just trying to get a whole cohort of kids who've never been expected to write, what are some of your suggestions for schools like that?
It's so much fun. We have a Facebook group, and you can see we have daily posts from teachers who every single day, it's like when you first discover the world of phonics. Like I always use phonics, but when I really drilled down into how to teach it, and then I saw the kids just take off even more so. When you introduce, well, first we start by showing, just tell them. We show them what an exemplar should look like, and they color code it. And now we've told them. And now they invariably say, can I have my pre-assessment back? I want to fix it because now they know. Now we revealed it. We unveiled. We opened the black box. Here it is. So we color code. And then we say, these kids use Power and Tide to create that. Let's use Power and Tide together. And now they're like chomping at the bit. They're like, I want to write again. And once you give them strategies, model it, give them some feedback, you can't get them to stop. The biggest thing that I hear from all the teachers is we were supposed to go to recess and they wouldn't stop writing. So it's like a faucet. You give them the strategies, you just tell them, you show them how to use the strategies, and suddenly the faucet is running full blast and you can't stop it. Calkins used to always say to us, and I've learned a lot from her, and I'm very grateful in a lot of ways. I was at Teachers College. She was there too. I was in human development, which was more structured, but there was a lot I learned from her that was valuable. But she would say, have them write for 15, then 20, then 30. Didn't work. The kids were stuck. The minute I learned to teach strategies explicitly, show them the criteria, the kids just ran. I was stunned. And it's so fun and energizing to see the teachers who get stunned by it every day. People who've been teaching for decades when they introduce these.
So you mentioned the workshop model. I think we should talk about it. So this was how I was brought up into teaching writing. Maybe it was like a school specific idea, but I've seen this in other schools. You put up like one of your bulletin boards would be like, pre-writing and then planning. And then the next one, it was sort of like a version of POW, but it was on a big board. And the kids would need to take themselves through the writing process. And what I was really trying to do was, you alluded to it, like build endurance, I guess. And so Right. And maybe I would at the very beginning tell a very short teaching point that would be around like a mini lesson where you'd be like, good writers do this, good writers do that. And we'd kind of have like a discussion and then we'd set them off and I would sort of circulate and I would find that very same thing. The endurance wasn't growing, or some of the kids that they would just start kind of writing a lot of gobbledygook just to kind of, humor me as I came around. I wasn't seeing the growth in their writing. So that's why I get like, I get worried about like only focusing on process writing, but you've illuminated all of the different components of ThinkSRSD. So how do we move away from folks like me who started in the realm of just like, get them to write lots and lots, to like be more strategic and more systematic with the instruction?
Yeah, I did the same. It's like a trip down memory lane. Memories, I'm sure we do want to pull up now that we know better, we do better. Mark Seidenberg has said balanced literacy, whole language may not have had it entirely wrong. It was just out of sequence. So that kind of repeated practice all makes sense if you front loaded the tools and strategies. So ThinkSRSD is a complete framework that includes everything you're going to need to write at the word level. We have something called, old dog, new tricks. We call it Tidal now, based on Adria Truckenmiller's research. And I make a wave with my arm because that's what the kids always do. We make a Tidal wave. The L in Tide stands for language box. And based on Adria Truckenmiller's research, she found that neck and neck, like way above and beyond any other quality of writing, was including all the elements of the structure and a language box. So when you give the kids Tidal and they know how they're supposed to structure their writing and the L, I want to include the language, then you're teaching a complete framework with all the components. You're teaching how to structure, you're teaching how to, with the gist work that we do every day, we're teaching sentence formation. So it's a complete framework. When you rigorously teach them, show them what it looks like, practice it with them, then when you move into the process writing, like you're describing, they've got the toolkit to be able to get better and better. Otherwise, it's like you're asking them to clear a forest, but you're not giving them any tools.
Absolutely. Do you see a difference in the children's like motivation once they've received the more the highly structured stuff? Like, do you see the kids, you said they're like off and running, but do they start to actually identify as writers, which was the goal of this sort of balanced literacy approach to writing? Do you start to see that the preparation led to their motivation?
Yes. And I think I've heard you talk about this before. It's almost like an irony that the constraints are what lead to the unconstraining, like the setting free, like the, yes, that giving them the structure then enables them to grow their wings. Steve Graham says it beautifully. You need a box before you can think outside the box. Yes, 100% that they are stuck without the structure. And then you give them the structure. And there is a moment, there's a dangerous moment where we're modeling and we're showing and they're copying. And you have to keep going. Otherwise, they stay stuck in the copying. So you have to, you cannot just give them the tools. You cannot just give them the tools and show them a few times how to use them. You have to stay with it for the long haul and show them, okay, you've seen my voice. You've seen our voice as a class. Now we want to see your voice. And so as I'm writing in front of the class, I want you to change this into your own words. And you have to really facilitate and nurture that. If you don't take it all the way, then the kids do get stuck. So the structure is what sets them free, but it's not enough to open the door. You need to walk through the door with them and support them until they're independent.
Love it. Let's talk about implementation again, because as a person who's really focused on coaching myself, like how do you kind of hand it off to these schools, and how do you, what kind of models and supports have you seen work well to like making sure that Think our SRSD is like used with intentionality and fidelity?
Love that question. We depend on the genius of the teachers and the coaches. And we find it in ample, every school we're working with, we find the lighthouses, we find the front runners, even the quieter teachers, you know, you get into a Zoom with them in a breakout and you're like, whoa, at what they're saying. But structurally, how we hand it off is we have multiple layers of cycles. So we have a power cycle in the classroom. And that is where typically from Monday to Friday, maybe a little longer, the people in my Facebook group are like, it takes 8 days. And other people are like, yeah, it takes 8 days. And they're like, Leslie said it only took five, but I'm so glad you're validating it takes eight. Sure. There's a power cycle that you do in your classroom where you read the text and write in response to it. And then you self-score, which we didn't get into, which is really important for the goal setting and the feedback. And then that's what creates the loop where the kids are writing, self-scoring, peer scoring, getting teacher feedback, and then they reset their goals or continue the same one with a new strategy. But there's a power cycle. On top of that, you have coaching cycles. And that's where the coach pre-meets with the teacher, helps him or her plan out what the power cycle will look like, how it will go, and then comes in to either co-teach or observe and give feedback. And then they meet at the end and analyze how the power cycle went. So that's a coaching cycle. But kudos to Tiffany Hogan and others who introduced me to implementation science. Sue Smith really introduced me to it out of MGH. And now we have a third layer of a cycle because we want to be able to support the coaches and their coaching cycle. So now we have leadership cycles that layer on top. And through the blessed federal government funding, which I hope we'll pick up again, we were able to study these three layers and really develop tools for that third outer layer to support the leadership cycles. So at the beginning of the year, the principal or school leader collects an implementation survey, and that is pure gold. Teachers are very honest. It's why I love being in our profession. We're surrounded by honest people, and it's good for the soul. And they will tell you, yes, I did this. No, I didn't do this. Well, boom, there's your MTSS at the level of the teacher data. And then the administrator meets with the coach and says, here's what they need support on. So they're feeding that coaching cycle. Then mid-year, they collect a second one. And then we have, we meet every month with the leaders to support the leadership cycle level. So first is an implementation cycle. Then is a how to do a walk through and how to support that for the coaches and for the principals, because they're both principals are supposed to evaluate. And then in January, they do mid-year supports. And so, and then we have a log that the coach keeps, and then they meet weekly with the administrators and they go over their log and we track this too. It comes out of the, all of this is coming out of the science world, implementation science, prior SRSD studies that used coach logs as a tool, not just to evaluate, but they actually may have a facilitative effect on raising outcomes. If you fill it in 10 times or more, you're supposed, you, research shows that you will have stronger gains in student learning. So we've got these multiple layers of cycles.
And it's needed. All of what you just described sounds, I love it that there's the top and then there's the bottom and they kind of meet in the middle. And we actually make sure that the coaches are partnering with the leaders as opposed to living on their own sort of or being tasked entirely with this responsibility. It makes a lot of sense. You have to ask yourself, I think, like, why are we at the point in American education where writing is just isn't taught to as much as we think it should be? And kids are coming into college at 18 years of age, and they just can't write. They can't produce a 5-paragraph essay. And that's sort of their shame as they try to navigate their first year of college. Another question I wrote down here was just around how you begin teaching writing for like the earliest kids to where does Think SRSD sort of fade out? Is it a, does, how far does it go before that's sort of the scope of your work?
Sure, from K to 12. I also just want to respond to something that you just said about how we just haven't gotten this right. And it's sort of, it hit me like Goldilocks. Like back 30, 40 years, writing was too dry and isolated and disconnected. And it was those Warner grammar books, or write a composition about something, but it wasn't connected. And then we went to LOOCs and the whole nation took on Writers' Workshop. I mean, it permeated all the HQIMs. We went way too loose, too far. IES, the Institute for Educational Sciences, the writing practice guides got it. They got it right. They synthesized the research and their recommendations are correct. The problem is that hasn't gotten out. So I thank you for this podcast because you're helping to get it out. I think that we do know what to do. We just need to get it into the hands of the teachers. And I am hopeful. I've seen more and more of the HQIMs taking on more and more of what's in that IES guide. So I do think we're going to get there. And I've never had more hope for K-12. How does Think SRSD work K-12? So SRSD itself has been validated all the way from college down to grade one. There's been some exploratory work on earlier skills in kindergarten by some of the SRSD researchers. We've always worked K to 12. We have explosive uptake. We have Kate Wynn in Canada, who's been really plowing the path for how to do this in kindergarten, like ironing out everything and then putting it up on our Instagram and Twitter and coming into our kindergarten courses and guiding everybody in how to do it. But the same principles, the same, just tell them that it's the same principle that works. I'm sure you see this, and I'm sure it's been eye-opening for you to see that just tell them works all the way from pre-K up to, grad and beyond. So explicit instruction at the core. Show them what it looks like, and then guided instruction, gradual release, model for them how to do it, but then don't let go too soon. Keep carrying them along until they reach that independent practice. That is the key, is to stick with it. We as a field often don't have enough time, don't give enough time, or switch too quickly, but it works the same all through all the different grades.
Yeah, I think in reading, we often have the teacher is talking about reading and the kids aren't reading. And then in writing, I think the teacher's often talking about writing or not doing any writing and the kids aren't writing. But we have to integrate a more sophisticated design so that they can write successfully and that they can write with certain structures that you've provided here that most teachers don't know about, so they can write using those structures moving forward eventually to independence. I am so excited about exploring more of these resources. I will put the IES guide in the show notes, and anything you send me, I'll put them in the show notes. Listeners, and if you want to check out Leslie Laud's work, Leslie, where do they go? What are some of the communities? You mentioned the Facebook group. How do they get in contact with you?
Yes, the Facebook group is almost 20,000 people now. And every day we're getting a dozen posts from people who are just so excited. And my greatest joy is that, so I have been obsessed with the problem of dissemination. Like I found this, it worked 20 years ago. Now, how do we get it out? And we've tried everything. We have workbooks that we began developing years ago. And then some teacher said, where are the slide decks? I'm like, I'm 35 years and I don't know what a slide deck is. I've never, but they're like, where are they? So we made slide decks. We put those up. Those are at TPT. They're cheap. I think they're $12. And then you can start bringing evidence-based practices into your classroom. The Facebook group, Instagram, Our website, thinksrsd.com, has a whole section of free materials, a starter kit, starter videos. But what's been really exciting is to see all the different ways people get started. And I think the one I like the best right now is when people on Facebook will say, I didn't buy anything. I didn't do anything. I just saw somebody post. So I tried it in my classroom. Here it is. And now my kids like writing better. So I'm like, if we solve the problem that the government put 11 million into, you know, by simply having people see pictures on Facebook, that is very exciting.
Yeah, check out these show notes and thank you so much for tuning in. I really do enjoy putting these podcast episodes together, but to sustain and to make this job continue to be worthwhile and sustainable, please send this podcast to a leader, to a friend, to another teacher, and give it a 5-star rating on the platform of your choosing. That's it for today. Thank you so much, everyone. Take care.